This is Climate Justice, Y'all, a podcast dedicated to lifting up and centering the climate and environmental justice movement in the South. Despite the South being the most biodiverse, diverse, and one of the largest economic engines in the world, we are underfunded and often barred from the decision-making table. Because of that, we decide to pull up a chair and amplify the stories of communities in the South hit the hardest by the climate crisis.
We're using good old-fashioned storytelling to shine a spotlight on these Southern leaders from all walks of life, putting in their blood, sweat, and tears to transform the region. The usage of y'all in the title is on purpose. We are honoring our Southern heritage of creativity, resilience, and ingenuity.
All right, y'all, it is season two of Climate Justice, Y'all. Let's get started. All right, well, hey, y'all. This is Abigail here, and as a wrap for season one of the Climate Justice Y'all podcast, we decided to do things a little bit different and have people interview Marisha and I rather than us interviewing other people. So could the fabulous anchor organizations introduce themselves, starting with either, let's start with Rev, since your daughter's on the show.
All right. Reverend Michael Malcolm, founder and executive director of the People's Justice Council, as well as executive director of Alabama Interfaith Power and Light, based in Birmingham, Alabama. It's good to be with you all. And I'll pass it on over to Michael Hansen.
Hey there, this is Michael Hansen. I'm the executive director of GASP, also known as the Greater Birmingham Alliance to Stop Pollution, based in Birmingham, Alabama. And I will hand it over to my friend, Alex Easdale.
Thanks, Michael. Alex Easdale, I'm the executive director of the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, and super happy to be here. Thanks. I'll pass it back to Marisha and Abigail.
Awesome. Yeah, this is actually kind of a full circle situation, because I think the first episode, we interviewed y'all, if I'm not mistaken.
So I actually think that's how it went.
That's awesome. Cool.
That's amazing. Okay.
How about this? Since people may not know that much about us, Marisha, could you give us like an introduction of who you are, and then I'll go and then they can ask us some questions?
Of course. Okay. So my name is Marisha. My dad is Michael Malcolm. I'm quite sure a lot of you guys know who that is. I am a junior in college. I attend University of Alabama in Birmingham. I'm a business management student. Yeah, I've been in this thing for quite a while, actually. Like, I actually did the math the other day, and it's been about 3 years, I think. Wow. So, I don't know. I'm still a beginner, but to me, I feel like I've been in this thing for a minute, you know? Abigail, I guess I'll pass it to you, and you can give it a shot.
I mean, to be fair, the past 3 years have felt like 30, and I think I can agree with that. So, And something Marisha forgot to mention is that she's also a hustler, and that's just who she is as a person.
Man, I gotta get this money, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't sleep. Well, I'm Abigail Franks. I live in Birmingham, Alabama with Marisha. I also went to the University of Alabama at Birmingham and graduated in 2020 with a political science degree. And And I now work with the Southeast Climate Energy Network. My boss, Alex, is one of the head honchos of this podcast. But yeah, I'll pass it to y'all. What do y'all want to know about us and like season one and everything?
Well, since I started off introducing myself, I guess I'll start off with questions. You all have had some fabulous guests throughout these episodes. And which guest has struck you the most? Which has inspired you? Which has made you want to get out and really do the work of doing justice?
Marisha, you want to go first?
Sure. So one of my favorite episodes was the one with Jeannie Economos, where she talked about the labor and whatnot going on in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but that episode just stuck out to me so much. Like, I knew what was going on with the farms and whatnot. Like, growing up, we talked about it in school and whatnot, but actually having someone who not only went through it, but saw other people going through it and stood up and created, I don't know, just the movement for those people really just stuck out to me, because it was like, yeah, I hear about this, but I never knew like actually what they went through, the struggles that they went through, having to work in God knows how hot it was during those times. But yeah, that's just one of the ones that really stuck out to me.
Yeah. I agree. It was actually the episode with Jeannie that, okay, actually, you know, back up. So that, I just want to set the scene a little bit. That episode, while we were interviewing her, I had to step away from the computer and like breathe for a second because of how intense it was.
Yeah.
And I actually remember I stopped recording and I was like, Jeannie, listen, like this is hard work. Marisha and I are brand spanking new in this. I've only, you know, like how do you do this for 20 plus years without getting exhausted? What gives you hope? Mm-hmm. And so that episode was a cornerstone for us asking the rest of the amazing leaders that we've had on this podcast about what gives them hope. Yeah. Yeah, that really, it changed everything. For me, God, it's hard to pick.
It was so good. I don't know. Every episode was so good.
And the thing is I kept saying over and over again, like after each episode, I'm like, y'all are going to love this. Y'all are amazing. Like, and it, so I can't, you know, I may cop out of this, but like, I can't pick a favorite. But what I can say is that the episodes that I really, really had a great time recording, like getting to know them more, was with Kathy Eglund, who Rev calls Mama Kathy and who no one else is allowed to call Mama Kathy. She was amazing to get to know because she's been fighting for the civil rights movement since the very beginning. I loved talking to Bree Nisley and Willie Dodson, I think was his last name, learning about coal ash pollution in Appalachia, or Appalachia, depending on where you are.
We learned that from him.
Yeah, even though I grew up in Southern Appalachia, but whatever. Anyway, talking to Nina, I mean, there were so many, and each and every one of them, first of all, are extremely humble.
Right.
They did not give themselves enough credit at all. Like I was shocked when Dr. Holmes Hummel was like, yeah, I got into the movement because I worked for Obama. And I was like, wait, what? You worked for Obama and none of us knew that. And I've been casually calling you Holmes rather than, you know, so all of them inspire me and all of them have showed me how important it is for all of us to support each other in this hard work. And so that helps inspire me fight for climate justice because I know that there's amazing people like everyone that we've interviewed backing us up and backing each other up. Rev, did that answer your question?
No, I think that is awesome to connect your experience and the energies that you felt when you were having these conversations to propel you in movement work as well as in life. I think that that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Michael Hansen smiling.
Well, of course. I loved hearing about, you know, the recap, basically, of some of the people you talked to. And I was wondering if maybe you could elaborate on some of the topics that you learned the most about. We had a very wide-ranging set of issues that were discussed, everything from farmers and labor to water and energy and democracy. So I'm just curious, like, what struck you from the first season? Like, what did you take away from all of these incredible interviews?
Abigail, I'm gonna let you take a lead on that one.
Oh, yeah. Hard question. Yeah. Oh, man. I learned so much from everyone, but something I think that is a key takeaway is understanding and appreciating that we are standing on the shoulders of decades and decades of work done by amazing people who haven't stopped. And so even though it feels like we're kind of grinding and going against like the heaviest current in the river and trying to swim upstream, even if it seems impossible, we've actually made a lot of distance. And yeah, we've made a lot of progress, especially in the past couple of years. And if they can do it, and if they can do this work for decades, then I can do it for decades.
For sure.
Something that I think resilience is probably something I learned from them. But I mean, we talked, even if like outside of an ethical / moral dilemma that this is, I learned a lot about the farm workers like struggle. I learned a lot about environmental justice and like specific case studies like in Mississippi and Tennessee and Virginia, and how, you know, even though they're in different states, we're all kind of fighting the same fight.
Right.
In a sense. I also learned about energy and like, you know, all that stuff. And so it was amazing. And honestly, like I could go back and listen to the episodes again and take notes for real. What about you, Marie?
Honestly, I'm have to go with what you said. Like, I don't know. It was more so the resilience of each of the people that we talked to. Like, yes, they were in this thing for years. I'm talking about since they were, like, some of them grew up going through the fight. And I think that was the main thing that stuck out to me more than, you know, learning about the environmental justice aspects or learning about the civil rights aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the fact that although they were tired, or although they seemed tired, or like they knew, oh my gosh, at the end of the day, I still have to get up and do this again. Like, although it seemed like all of that, they still wanted to do it. And that stuck out the most to me. And it was just like, yeah, we definitely can. We're doing this for a reason. Like, we see the changes. And they may not be like the biggest changes or whatnot, but just the smallest things of it, it does something, you know? It does something.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, something I did learn, like speaking of resilience, the indigenous leaders that we spoke to were mind-blowing. And like, we like in the second episode, we talked with Juan Mancias from Texas, and learning about like his tribal struggle and how, you know, I mean, they are just still pushing through it. And then like we talked to Chief Pete Parr from the PD Indian Tribe in South Carolina, and like learning how they respect the land and everything was also vital, because it's kind of shifted my way of looking at environmentalism a lot. It's more of a cultural, it's cultural and it's personal, and this struggle, it's very like, and it's okay for it to be emotional, and it's okay for it to not be, quote, you know, I guess Western scientific, you know, I don't have to rely on facts to speak the truth. I can rely on personal experience with this as well.
And I think all of them did, honestly, like it, not just the tribal members. It was everyone that we spoke with. They all related to it on a personal level, whether they grew up in it or they've been in a fight for a long time. Like, they all had some personal connection to why they were doing what they were doing.
Yeah, and that's just as valid as scientific studies, if not more valid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm so enamored with your experiences because of that connection on that personal and that more practical level. It wasn't theory based, and it wasn't policy wonky language but you all were able to have this conversation based on personal thought and experience. And you all connected with it and felt something through it. And I know that the listeners also had to feel something and connected as well. So thank you again. I can't say thank you enough, and you'll continue to hear me say thank you throughout this.
Yeah, thank you, Reverend Michael, I agree. And thank you, Marisha and Abigail. So I want to just piggyback on some of what y'all said. And actually something that Marisha said at the beginning when she was introducing herself, she said she's been at this thing for about 3 years now. So I'm assuming at this thing means part of this climate movement, environmental justice movement. So y'all are younger than we are. Y'all are really the future. You're would fall within Gen Z, or I guess a tweener between Gen Z and millennial. Really, I mean, you're hugely important as a generation right now. You've talked to a lot of leaders who've been doing this work for 20 plus years, some much longer than that. So are you encouraged? I mean, what do you foresee this thing looking like in the future? What place you see yourselves in? Whether you continue being part of this movement or, you know, your career takes you elsewhere. So I'd like to start with Marisha on this one. Thanks.
Okay. Where do I see myself? Did this encourage me? It's definitely encouraging. And I don't know if it's more so encouraging to keep going. I don't know if it's encouraging to... I don't know, but... because I can't answer that to the best of my ability at this moment. But I can say it's encouraging, and it makes you want to keep fighting. It makes you want to do better for generations after myself. Like, yeah, it makes you want to put in the work. I loved it. I really did love hearing all the stories and the personal connections. I loved it. I did. It was better than hearing statistics and hearing the science. It was better than that. It gave everything it needed to give.
Yeah, I think when I think of encourage, so I would say that I am so much more encouraged by the people in this movement now, because through this, I've been able to get to know the rock stars and everything. Mm-hmm. I am discouraged by the way that the government and, you know, corporations and everything has taken advantage of communities for generations, and there's still so much work to be done.
Yeah.
But I think we, you know, maybe this is my Gen Z tweener millennial coming out, but like, I think we've now faced an opportunity to be a lot more creative about how we approach this work. And I think that's something that people like Marisha and I and the new generation of this, of climate fighters, like that's something that we need to, I guess that's our place in this movement, is to provide creativity and innovation in a sense, because like we're learning from y'all and we're learning from people who've been in this movement for a while about what works and what doesn't work. And so now we can take that knowledge and see if something else will work and see if we can fix this. Personally, I see myself, it's really interesting because I went into this having a lot of faith in policy and law because of my background. And now I find myself questioning that and having more faith in people than anything else. While policy and law is important, and obviously it's people that need to write it, for me, I am much more encouraged and much more rejuvenated by working with people and working to ensure that communities have their needs met, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, Adam. No, just saying thank you. That's a wonderful answer. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I was having that conversation today with a group of students from Cornell University about using what we have and bringing our skill sets to this fight. Because what we found out as we listen to these stories, which you all have emphasized so eloquently, what we find out when we listen to these stories is how it moves our hearts to be community. And what we found out over time is that we are so disconnected from being community that we need those jolts to connect us once again. And what you've experienced is that connection or that pull to connect with community. And when you do, you bring your whole self to it. And that includes your skill set. What would it look like if we brought all of our skill sets to this fight? I guarantee you we would change a great deal in a little amount of time if we would bring our whole skill sets to the fight. So thank you, Abigail, for even saying that you would want to bring your whole self into this battle and ensure that we have a better tomorrow.
I mean, at this point, it's personal and I'm a little spiteful. So, like, you know, like, it's just, I don't have a choice anymore. And, you know, I felt like I didn't before, but after this and after working with Sin for the past couple years, this shit is personal. And I'm going to see it through, and I'm going to help as much as I can and understand that I'm one of many doing this work. And that helps, that encourages me, honestly, is understanding I'm not alone in this. I know it's supposed to be an interview of us, but Alex and Michael Hansen, do y'all want to jump in at all? Cause I would love to hear like y'all's experience with this. We actually, listeners, we all just spent the like last week together doing National Assembly things. Marisha had to work, bless her heart. I know.
Unfortunately.
But I got to see these people in person and hug them. And so it was amazing, but I would love to hear what y'all had to say.
I want to talk a little bit about just the process to get to where we are. We're concluding season one of the podcast, and just that story, you know, this was an idea that we had in a call, a few of us, 2 or 3 years ago. And I just think it's cool, you know, that you have an idea, and a lot of times great ideas are shared and then nothing happens or they don't work out. And this one did, and it's working out, you know. And I'm talking, we've done this on a budget, you know, but I think one key takeaway has been the collaboration. And I'd like to mention the groups that are involved. I lead the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, which is a membership network in the Southeast with now 78 member organizations, big and small, a ton of frontline groups that are doing the work that y'all are talking about and edifying here. In any case, GASP has been a partner from the onset, People's Justice Council, Alabama Interfaith Power and Light, Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy as well. They're not here today, but Jennifer Crossland has been an amazing leader within this program. And Colette Bichon Battle as well, who was in that initial interview that we did, where you all interviewed us. So the whole process of doing this, and basically virtually, we didn't have very many in-person meetings. So we've done it all through Zoom. And it's been a heck of a lot of work. And I think it's been extremely successful. And when you look at the lineup of the people that we've interviewed, it just speaks to the power of our networks and the power of the influence that we have to be able to talk to a Holmes Hummel and Pete Parr and so many other, you know, Kathy Eglin. I mean, come on. So, yeah, I just wanted to highlight that this process has been amazing. And we're building upon it, and it enhances the other work that we're doing collectively. So I'll pass it to Michael because I haven't heard from him in a second, but there's my piece. Thanks.
No, this is all very good. And Abigail, I'm glad you mentioned that we were, some of us were all just together for a few days this past week. I wonder, Marisha and Abigail, do you have any thoughts on, let me back up. So some of the stuff we were working on this past week had to do with, you know, direct action and mass escalation for climate action. And this podcast is about storytelling and narrative and introducing people doing the work and living these realities every day. And then there's policy that we all work on at different levels. And so I wonder if you could reflect a little bit on how you see those things intersecting with one another. It's so interesting that we're all a part of these different strategies, and how do you see those strategies playing out in the long term? Because like you said, we don't have a choice. This is personal. We have to win. And so I think for me, it's all strategies are good strategies. So that's where I'm coming from. But what do y'all think?
Abby, go.
And you just throw me on the bus. I got to think on the spot. Well, you know, actually, I threw Alex and the Michaels under the bus by asking them questions, even though they're interviewing us and they're exhausted. So we'll just move on with that. But reflecting on how all of this is intersecting, oh, God. Well, it kind of makes me think of, so I've been reading, well, first of all, I think that we are kind of in the golden age of climate like activism and climate, like policy making and everything. Like we are entering this phase where it's kind of a make or break situation. So we're going to see a lot of different things come out of that. But I think this is all intersecting because we're all talking to each other. And it being the age of Zoom and, you know, the internet and everything, thankfully it's a double-edged sword, but thankfully we are able to be in community with one another, even if we're across the country. And so of course it's intersecting because we are all connected. What I was going to say is I've been reading this book called Emergent Strategies by a fabulous person named Adrienne Marie Brown. And she talks a lot about like biomimicry and the need to, biomimicry is essentially us reflecting nature. It's kind of a theory on that. And she mentions how, for example, mushrooms, even though they are apart, they are all connected and they are all working together to not only support themselves, but support life. And they do this through communication. And so I think a very similar thing is happening on all levels of climate policy, climate change, and like changing the climate, if you will. It's all intersecting. And I hope that answers that question. I'm trying to put really big concepts into words, but I kind of see it as a spider web and we can't do one without the other. And so I'm glad that it's happening.
My part, let's see. It sucks that this is nationwide and everyone gets a feel of this.
Oh man, yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, we have someone we can lean on, we have someone we can go to, whether it be here in the United States or all the way across the sea somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Someone, we can go somewhere and get some knowledge, some more knowledge about how we can fight this, how we can better ourselves. It sucks, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that, Marisha, that brings up a really great point. This is intersecting because the oppressive systems that we're in have kind of made it all of our problems, you know? Like, this is intersecting because it's affecting all of us. And the fact, like, the people that we've interviewed have showed that even if you're in different states or even if you're in different regions, they probably have a very similar story to other people. And so it's intersecting in that way. So thank you, Marisha, for bringing that up. That was a great question. That got my wheels turning a little bit.
Yeah.
So how excited are y'all about season two? What is that going to look like?
I'm so excited just because in this season, guys, we have allowed you guys to make the decision of who we get to bring on the show. It's scary, but it's fun. And I know it's going to be exciting, just as exciting as the first season. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, to kind of, I guess, Marisha, just let everyone know, part of our, like, the surprise that we're going to do for the, like, launch of this episode is we're going to ask the listeners to provide leaders that we should interview. And so that's really exciting. And as someone who is a type A person, that is nerve-wracking for me to wait on that. Something I'm excited about, I really want to know more about frontline solutions to the climate crisis. And the first season, we kind of discussed and highlighted the issues and the unique realities mm-hmm. we're facing as a region. I can't wait to build upon that and learn about what we as Southerners are doing about it. And to continue to be inspired by folks, it's like food to me. I need it. I need that kind of stuff. So I'm super pumped. I'm also excited. I have so many environmental justice crushes that I'm really hoping y'all add to the list that I really just want to talk to, because this podcast gives an excellent, foot in the door to talk to people that I really, really look up to. And so that's what I'm really pumped about. I want to close this because Marisha has to go back to work, y'all. We are on a time crunch. I'm not kidding. But like, I really want to close this. I don't want to take up y'all's time either, but to the Michaels with a S. Yes. And Alex, if y'all had to describe the first season in like a sentence or a word, how would you describe it? And how do you feel about sexy?
Before you do that, Abigail, I wanted to jump in on and piggyback on your excitement just for a moment, because I'm also excited for what we're going to do with partnering with Climate Justice, y'all, to provide some visuals as well. Yes. With us discussing some of these with the leadership. So being able to talk with Rev as well as Climate Justice, y'all, I think is going to be a neat combination that we'll be able to present this next coming season as well. So just wanted to put that out there also.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shameless plug. We're making, like, we're going to be adding visuals to this, and that's going to be cute. And maybe we'll get, like, a documentary or something. That'd be nice.
Ooh, hint, hint, maybe.
Yeah. Man. But, yeah, so thank you, Rev, for that. Y'all stay tuned for that. There's so many things.
Right.
But, what's a word that describes season one to y'all?
I'll start it off. Enlightening.
Ooh.
I feel like I was very naive to the fact that there was a lot more. It was a lot more deeper situations that were going on that I had no idea about. So maybe I wasn't naive, but I just didn't know about it. So enlightening.
Hell yeah. I love that. I think for me, I would say humbling. Being surrounded and talking to the leaders in our region. And also here, like, seeing that they were human beings and not people that I just, like, read about and, like, essentially worship a little bit, that they're human beings too, and that we're all humans in this fight. It really humbled me. And it also made me feel a lot. It comforted me in a way too.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Hansen, you had a good thinking face.
Yeah, my word, I think, is connectedness. And what I mean by that is a couple of different layers. First, you mentioned earlier that some of the fights we're fighting are the same across the states and areas of the South. And so we're connected in that way. And some of our opponents use the same tactics. And we see these things play out over and over and over again in many of the same ways. And so as we connect better, we learn better how to, you know, react to those things and be proactive instead. But also, just hearing the stories and, like, some of this stuff is very personal. It makes me feel connected to those fights, whether they're in Central Florida or, you know, Central Texas or Northern Louisiana, whatever. I feel more connected to my homeland, which is the Southern U.S. So I'm just thinking connectedness and how important that is.
Yeah, I want to build upon what Michael just said. That was very insightful. My word is going to be victorious. And, you know, talking about connectedness and intersectionality and the fact that the work, it's not just one thing. You know, the facts are important. In fact, the facts back our fights, if you will. These are based on science. And there's an activism component, but there's also a policy component. You know, there are many different elements to this work. And they need to come together for us to succeed. To basically, you know, save ourselves, you know, and other species. You know, we're killing our planet. Certain models just don't work. They need to be renewed and completely changed. So I think, you know, the connectedness, not only in the South, to the rest of the country, but I think other parts of the world, you know, what's happening in Puerto Rico, what's happening in South America, what's happening in Africa, Europe, whatever, what's happening in Asia, in different parts of the world, and how can we join and learn from each other and support each other, because this is a global issue. This is not something that just relates to one region, and there's a lot of learning to be had from everywhere and from many different movements and leaders and what have you. So very, very good lead in there, Michael. Thanks.
And I think I would go with community. Just as Michael has talked about being connected and Alex has talked about being victorious, I'd like to lift up community, because I feel like we were compelled through the stories, through the heart connections, to be community. We have, as a society, fallen desperately out of alignment with what it is to be community. And I think this calls us, in particular, for those in the Gulf South who we featured, they called us back to being community, to a place where we learn to care for one another and see one another from the heart, not just from the head, but from the heart as well. These stories weren't, again, filled with a lot of data and science and policy, and let me say that all of that is great and we need that, but these stories were filled with stories of triumph and of victory, as well as of struggle, and we were connected in that and called to be community, called to see those who spoke to us and those who they spoke for, and in that to do something about it. So again, thank you all for this. Thank you for this, for your hosting, Abigail and Marasia, and bringing your expertise to this conversation as well.
Yeah, this whole thing, we've learned hard facts and we've learned heart facts as well, H-E-A-R-T. Well, I am so honored to have been a co-host in the first season, and I cannot wait for season two, and I love y'all very, very much.
Thank you, Abigail and Marasia. Great, great job. Can't wait.
Woohoo!
I'm glad to have y'all a part of my chosen family.
Same, same. All love. Hey, listen, y'all.
All love.
Love, peace, and light to you.
That's a wrap for season one. See y'all soon. Stay tuned for season two. Thank you.